Welcome to the Mother Forkin' Podcast. Where we feed you some real shit on parenting.
Hi, Celeste.
What's up, Megan?
Oh, you know, just living the life.
Living the quarantine life.
Exactly. Quarantined up in here. Things are going well. How was your Easter weekend?
It was an awesome day, especially since Enzo is a little older. He was kind of understanding the concept of eggs and you know, little gifts and things, activities. So it was real fun. How about you guys?
Yeah, same. It was great because now Adrian's a little bit older. So when we put the eggs out for him and Briggs to go hunt down and collect, he just was like, we opened the door and he just was off running, and Briggs was just like da 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 da, and then he eventually saw one and he put it in his basket, and then I think we put like two in his basket, so he had three out of the possible 48 that you could collect. But it was the kind that had the confetti in it, so then we had fun smashing it. And then we didn't do any candy this year for the boys. And instead, we just did like these fun little streamer things that they can twirl around. And then the other thing was a bubble machine, which they had a blast with using all day long. But
that's awesome. Great weekend. That's good. We're excited that we can continue as much as possible to record our episodes. And we enjoy doing it. We enjoy connecting. We enjoy that you guys are reaching out to us. So today, what do we have in store, Megan?
Oh, very excited. I've been waiting for this one for a very long time. Brandy Ferner is our guest, and she is the author of Adult Conversation, and her book is due out May 5th. So next month, a little bit less than a month away, which is super exciting. She also actually has a podcast, which is the same name, Adult Conversation. And apparently she's been featured on Good Morning America and HuffPost, Romper, Cafe Mom, Today Parents, crazy attributes right there. But extremely excited. She actually reached out to us and wanted to be on our podcast. So I'm thrilled to have her on today.
Yes, we both really enjoyed her book. It is definitely an excellent quarantine read. Hilarious, relatable. So we are excited to have her here. Let's get to it.
We are so excited. This is Megan, by the way. I've been waiting for so long for this interview. And when Ellen had reached out and everything, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then she sent the book, and Celeste and I read the book, and it's hilarious and it's so relatable. It's not even funny. I feel like you wrote a book on my life pretty much. So,
well,
same here.
Thank you. I mean, I'm hearing that from people. And of course, there's a part of me, even as I was writing it, that I'm like, are people going to want to read their own life? You know, it's like, because even me writing it, it's like I would get 3 hours from a babysitter to go write about hell. And then that would be my free time. And then I'd come out and be back in it. And so there was this thing going on in my head, like, why am I doing this to myself? Because it's actually worse than if I just took the time to myself. But I felt like there was something important about documenting that time in the trenches while still in the trenches before any of the softness and warm fuzzies could take over and change the narrative. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you guys for reading it. I'm amazed that when any mom reads a book, I'm just like, thank you. That's so huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we were super psyched to get our first ever ARC or advanced reader copy. So
yeah,
that was really cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go ahead and dive in. But before we actually do that though, we would like to know you a little bit more before we dive into all these questions that we have for you. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? How many kids do you have? What's your husband like? All that.
Well, you've read my book.
Yeah.
So April is a version of me. But so I'm in Southern California. I'm near Laguna Beach. So like basically the book locale is where I'm at. I'm currently in a parking lot that gives me more bars of reception than at home. So yeah, so I've got two kids, a boy and a girl, an Elliot and a Violet. I mean, that's not their names, but they are currently 13 and 6. And so they're old enough that like life is pretty great. And the other day I was like, God, I don't even complain anymore. Like, who am I?
There's hope.
Like, I don't know. It just is like, who am I when motherhood feels better, which is like great, obviously. And there's, you know, different challenges. Like I have more time to think about myself and more time, you know, to, I don't know, to just have autonomy and all those things. But yeah, my husband is a version of Aaron. My husband is a better version of Aaron. I feel like I've set boundaries. Like, so the me that wrote that book like 4.5-5 years ago, as I've done edits on it, as I got to the end here and I was reading it again, I thought, wow, the me of right now would maybe be a little bit harder on Aaron and would maybe do a little bit different. And I thought, well, I can't change the book to where I am now. So anyway, it's like April is a version of me that doesn't necessarily exist anymore. I mean, lots of the basics of her do, but my version of April inside me is in a different place. So that was kind of a weird thing to rectify after writing something years ago and then reading it with these new eyes that, you know, I really try to make things equal in my marriage. And I luckily have a husband who's so on board. I mean, he still benefits from dad privilege and he wasn't conditioned in the same way I was. So he still falls short. Like I think anybody does, but man, is he willing and man, does he try. So I feel lucky about that. But because of that, I have a lot of ways of that we do things so that I don't hate him. So
Well, that's awesome. This is Celeste here. So I guess you can pretty much say hi. Your own experience kind of inspired your debut novel, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? Really, I had all these feelings about motherhood. And they were, it was just like they were on the surface. And then one day, I just thought to myself, it was like it kind of hit me over the head with an idea. You know, what would it be like if two moms went to Vegas and they really got to do whatever they wanted? Like they just fled. Like, would they do drugs? Would they cheat? Would they just lay in a hotel room in the bed alone and binge on reality TV? And I just thought, how fun would that be to write that? And then as I thought about it further, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if one of them was a therapist? You know, it's like we have these people in our lives that help us, and then they're all human. Like we're all human. All the experts, any of the experts are all human. I thought, wouldn't that be kind of cool? And then the clincher for me was, and what if one of their neighbors was Snoop Dogg? And then
heck yeah.
And then I was
Snoop Doggy Dog.
And then after that I was like, I wanna write this. And then I, of course, had a 2-year-old at the time and thought, like, I can't write a book. A, I'm not an author. How does somebody write a book? B, where would I even get the time to do that? We don't really have the money for a babysitter, much like my main character didn't. And then I couldn't sleep for about a week and a half. I was up at night taking notes, writing scenes, writing things I'd wanted to say about motherhood, all the complicated stuff that nobody wants to talk about. And I thought to myself, the only way out of this is if I write it. Like, this is not going to leave me. So in a way, you could say it was a non-consensual book that I wrote.
I love that. And I feel like that's kind of the premise of why I started this podcast, is because people don't ever talk about the thing. We're fairly new moms. I mean, Celeste has an infant, yeah. I guess, now.
Aww. An infant, and, and a 2-year-old.
I have 3.5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And it's like, we didn't know about the postpartum blues and all this. No one tells you about that stuff. So I totally connect with you on that level. And then another thing that I connect with you on your book is one of the first anecdotes that Celeste and I actually both connected with you on is the fact that there's some definite inequalities happening between the moms and the dads or the parenting roles. And you mentioned, yes. and you just mentioned again, the term dad privilege, which I know I feel so hard about. And I feel, I feel like there are definitely many other moms that feel the same way. So can we just have you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yes, yeah. I think you can. I think I could say the word dad privilege to any mom. And in about 10 seconds, if she's like, what is that? She could then be like, oh, I know what that is. But I mean, because we know, right? We've experienced the other side of that. But basically, for those who are sleep deprived and their brain isn't functioning quite right, is dad privilege is a way that men benefit from the social conditioning that tells all of us that men don't have to do equal childcare, home labor, or nurturing. So it's mm-hmm. like that low expectation that's set for dads so that all they have to do is show up and they're given credit for being a great dad. Whereas we moms have this laundry list and so much of it is unseen of what we have to do. I mean, I remember being at the stage where you guys were with having an infant. And I remember feeling like, wait, so I'm the end of the line here. Like the baby can be passed, you know, to grandparents, and then if they can't get the baby sued, then it's to dad. And if dad can't get the baby sued, then it's to me. And like, I have nowhere to hand the baby. And that to me was like an inherent, like I'm my expectations are different. Like at the end of the day, I'm the one who has to keep this kid together, happy, healthy. And of course my husband will help. And like I've said over the years, he's grown and we've both grown together that we have it set up quite equally because I pretty much demand it. And also he's just on board because he's like, he's one of these like, you know, modern feminist guys who wants to show up and do right. But he also benefits from dad privilege. So, you know, like anybody, he slips sometimes. But yeah, those are the ways that I see dad privilege happening. And right now, I feel like is illuminating dad privilege because there's so much that's, you know, the burden of this pandemic that women are just shouldering, like just immediately and without question that the women will do the distance learning and then the cooking of the meals. And obviously there's households where that's set up a little bit differently, but for the most part, it's like dads are working still and the moms will take on any of that burden because the businesses are running the same. So that kind of stuff, I feel like in this moment is really being highlighted. And I think we're being asked to really look at it and try to make a difference and have people make a change, you know, if possible, like wake up to this as if we weren't woken up to it before. Not that we needed a pandemic, but
exactly. Yes. And I feel like you hit the nail on the head with that. I want to back up though on something that you just said about how moms are the end of the line, or you as a mom felt you had an infant. And something when I was stalking you online that I found was the image that you had posted, that blurry image you posted that went viral. And can you explain that? I would like for you to set the scene on that and just to talk a little bit about that image for a minute.
Yeah, sure. I was at lunch with a friend because my kids are older now. And so things like that happen. So I was at lunch and we were sitting in this little corner nook and I look over and there's this big family birthday party that's taking up like 3 or 4 tables and everybody's having a great time and they're drinking wine and just chatting. And I'm watching this and I notice just because I pick up on this stuff probably too much. My husband would be like, oh, can you just leave it alone for a minute? But I see this mom to the side with a baby and she's doing the thing we've all done and we all do, which is she's like bouncing the baby, trying to entertain it, showing it pictures on the wall. There's a balloon that the baby's batting, but she's like completely away from the table. And I watched this happen. My friend and I were there for like 2.5 hours. I watched this happen the entire time and she would go around and she would like walk around with the baby to people at the table and people would tickle its foot or something cute, but nobody would take the baby from her and nobody was letting her. I mean, she wasn't having any of the fun. And then when the meal came, she was holding the baby while trying to eat the meal. And I took a picture of it because the visual Like, you could just see this mom detached from the table, and we'd all been there. And I didn't know what I'd do with it. This is how I work in the world. Is I, if I see something, I'm like, that's interesting. And I'll take a photo, and I don't know if it'll be anything. But I blurted out so that I wasn't just putting these people totally on blast. But I made this post just about, you know, being this unseen work that we do. And everybody at the table wanted to benefit from the fun of having a baby around, but nobody wanted to share this work with this mom. And it just, it hit me because I'd been there. And so I posted about it. And like I said, I just kind of threw up this post, and then it went crazy because, you know, I think people had seen themselves. And even if you have a wonderful spouse, and even if you have helpful grandparents, they're not there all the time. And there's so much, like my book shows, that happens during the day, so that when you even get to that place, you are already worn down. And if the other people are just wanting to have a good time at a party, they don't even notice that you've been doing this for 24 hours straight.
Yes.
It's Celeste here. I completely agree. There's a lot of moments where, you know, with two young ones, we feel like that all the time. Our husbands fully don't understand the fullness of what's going on in our minds, that, you know, we're physically, mentally, everything drained. Mm-hmm. And so we don't speak up. So I would like to hear your advice on how you, throughout your relationship and your marriage, have kind of, you know, set those boundaries for your husband. You know, April, I love her story. She goes on this amazing adventure journey, right?
Right.
To feel validated by her husband, but also towards herself. So yeah. Talk to us about your personal.
Yeah. I was an attachment parent early on before I realized how bullshit that was. And I don't mean it like there's parts of attachment. So I did attachment parenting light with my second, but I subscribed to a certain way of mothering that made me sacrifice everything so that every moment this child would know that he was loved and doted on and that our bond was there. But like our bond was there. I didn't need to sacrifice myself to the point that I was like a shell of a person. So that's kind of how it started, where I got into it. And I thought, well, this is what a good mom does. And this is what a loving mom does. And then a couple years later, I'm like, huh, I'm noticing that my friends who don't do all the stuff I do are actually happier than I am. But yet I'm doing it, quote unquote, right. And then I was like, I'm a jerk. Like, not only am I a jerk, but this is not working. So it's been a slow learning process for me how to unpack and unwind my agreements about what good moms, quote unquote, good moms do or don't do. And then asking for help from my husband. And some of it is letting go. Some of it is allowing him to do things in a different way that I would do, which I know many of us have a problem with. But I mean, some of the things that I've done that have been really helpful, like one of the things that I've done with my husband is there was a time when if his work would ask him to work late or if there was an event that he needed to be at, and it happened on a night where the kids both had activities or something. So him being pulled away meant that something fell through the cracks and we needed to get a babysitter. I used to find the babysitter. He'd say, oh, I have to work late, or, you know, I have this event. And so I would look for either one of the grandmas or a babysitter. And I thought, why am I doing that? Why am I looking for the babysitter? Like, that made me feel like I was, you know, resentful, or just like that didn't make sense. Your job is requiring you to not be able to do the thing that we agreed we were going to do. Like one night our son has tennis and our daughter has gymnastics at the same time. So if you can't take our son to tennis, why am I scrambling to cover that? So I said to him, I said, it would make me a lot happier as a person if when that happens, you would be the one to ask your mom if she'll come watch the kids, or, you know, she'll take our son to tennis or find the babysitter. Like, I don't want to be the person who's doing that. And so he said yes. And it's like, even those little things, like that's such a minor thing, but that's what I mean with the dad privilege and like this default parent stuff. Like, I just assume, and I'm so conditioned to do it, that any of that stuff falls on me. So really starting to question, why shouldn't he do that? His job is the one that's asking something different of him. And I'll tell you what, his work did that a lot less. because I think what happened is he would say no more often, right? Because he'd have to be the one to get the babysitter or make it work. And if it turned out that we couldn't find anybody, then it was like, well, I can't split the car in half and drive kids to two different places. So you just can't do it. And that has been great. So there's things like that that I've set up so that, and he's, you know, luckily he's been on board to do that, have made it a lot more fair.
So just being kind of like straightforward. Cause I mean, I hear with men, you just literally have to tell them, blah, 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 do this because this, no, you know, ifs, ands, or buts. But I love how April pulled some, like, you're on your own. Have you done some of those situations? Because I feel like men could benefit or learn a lot from, like, hands-on, oh, shit, this is what my wife is dealing with. I mean, have you pulled a number of those? Or?
Well, I haven't done them. That was such a gratifying moment to write, by the way, when she says, well, your babysitter just canceled. Like, I still get chills thinking about that moment, because it's like we all want that moment of just like, yes, like get out of there. I didn't do it like in that way, but I definitely, there was a point in which I think my youngest was about 3 or 4 where I got into doing birth work and I was going on retreats and had to go away for things that I would just know. And he's like a nurturing dude that was brought up by his mom and his grandma. So he's like a nurturing kind of guy. I just knew that he would do okay. But when they're younger, especially if you're nursing, like that whole part is so hard. But I had to let go, and they would be fine. And so he really would step up when I would go. Now, I mean, the thing about it is, and now it's different because we've had conversation after conversation about it, but it used to be that I would go away and like he would keep them alive and, you know, they'd have fun. But then there would be so much when I got home that I needed to do that wasn't done. So it's like, you know, as moms, we're caretaking our kids, but we're also doing all of that stuff like grocery shopping, laundry, cleaning up, all that stuff that makes a house work. Whereas sometimes when our spouses have the kids, they're just playing and having fun, which we want them to be able to do. But then I think there's a moment in the book like this. So then when we come back, is it worth even going? Because then we have all the work that we didn't do while we were gone. So I told him at some point, I'd like when I leave, for you to be doing the same things that I would be doing. So when I come back, it's just like, I don't have to go back and do work. It's like, I'm coming home and we're already, you know, we're already sped up to that moment and there's not anything that I have to do. So now, I mean, I feel like people are going to hate me for this, but like when I go away and when I come home, he's gone to the grocery store, the house is completely, he's sweet. And he knows that coming home to a clean house is something that I would like to have happen, and he's done laundry. Like it's, but I mean, you have to like, you have to have these hard conversations. And I honestly don't know that every marriage is set up for it. I feel grateful that the guy that I picked in college who also likes Snoop Dogg happens to also be a really great guy and a great husband. But like, I couldn't guarantee that. And I know of a lot of guys who would be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And so I don't know what to say in that situation.
Everything you're saying right now is exactly. So my husband and I first got married, or when we even got married, you know, it was a honeymoon phase, rainbows, butterflies, everything. And then we had our first child 3.5 years ago, and it was all new waters that we were navigating. And it was just, we didn't know what to do. And we were miles, hours away from family. And my mom was flying down here into Texas from Maine all the time, like every month for the first year that my child was here. And it was just so hard. Mm-hmm. And then my husband was just like, okay, I don't know what to do with this tiny human. And then anytime, and I definitely felt resentment toward him when he would be like, okay, I'm going to run to the store. And I'm like, no, I want to go. And then, but it was like, yes. Well, I was here with baby and because I'm breastfeeding and I am the one to change his diaper and just stay up with, like you said, the housework and this and that. And then, I, instead of expressing how I felt, because he isn't a mind reader, and like Celeste said, you need to be very to the point with men about your asks and your requests. I would just hold it all in, get so pissed and upset all the time. And then by the time I had my okay, I found my voice a little bit. It was still, you know, feelings of resentment. But then now I'm like, okay, look, I need you to help me with this. And I would like you to do this. And yes. I actually, for the first time, trip out in California at the end of January, and I left both boys with him, and everyone was alive. When I got back, the house was actually clean, laundry was done. I was like, wow. Right?
Go, yeah. Megan.
So I really do. And if it were kind of go back and say to my younger self 3.5 years ago, just, you know, express, talk to your significant other about this. But mm-hmm. but one thing I yes. do want to bring up is many of us do, and I think I'm who underestimate how much our marriages do change after kids. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you would have told you about marriage after having kids before you actually had any children?
Oh gosh. I almost feel like you know, I feel torn about this because I feel like, well, there's nothing, you can't know this. Like, there's nobody can tell you. It doesn't matter if somebody had laid out this entire thing, which is interesting because I wonder if people who don't have kids who read my book, I wonder if they will have being told in that sort of a way of what it can be like. I wonder if they'll have a different like barometer for things, or if they'll notice more things that some of us didn't. But I guess I would answer your question to say, I wish there were things my husband had been told. So like, for example, on, you know, on my podcast, the first episode, I think, is the one where we look behind the curtain of motherhood. And we talk about so many, a friend of mine and I who are on similar pages, talk about so many things that would be helpful. Like, for example, if somebody had told my husband, hey, so your wife, you need to really caretake her in terms of look out for what you know she needs. And instead of having her have to break for her to ask for that, offer it up. So I mean, like, imagine that. So like, you know, on that podcast episode, one of the things I hear people, they message me about all the time is, you know, there's this thing about our husband's going for a run, and every husband has their thing, or every spouse has their thing that's like their exercise. And especially in those first years, you know, when your spouse says to you, like, hey, is it okay if I go for a run? And you like hate their face, but you're like, I'm awful because you should be able to go for a run. But why do I feel this way? And there's so much wrapped up in that, which is, I felt like for a while that my husband always got what he needed. Like, cause he's running his machine. Like he's looking out for himself, but we're wired to look out for everybody else. So I felt, and I didn't ask for what I needed. So this is the long-winded way of me saying, I wish somebody had sat down with my husband and told him, you have to look out for these things. Even if she's like, no, I don't have time for that, you need to tell her, yes, you do. And I'm taking the baby, and you know, you need to do these things. So I think if we had guys understand that a little bit more, I think some of that stuff would be easier. Even some of the resentment pieces, like if there was a course that's like how to have your wife not resent you after kids. Which I know there's a book out there, How to Not Hate Your Husband After Kids. And so maybe if there was some sort of course, I mean, really what we're talking about is we're talking about deprogramming men around, you know, these gender roles is really, I think, would be the most helpful thing here. Because we hear stories from friends and moms about some of the postpartum kind of stuff and how our marriage changes. And so I think we kind of know some of that, but then we aren't prepared for the person that we're co-parenting with to be the person that we feel like we're at war with when we are with them.
Yes, amen.
Seriously.
I
completely agree, right? She said it best. Guys need... So maybe we should have your husband on our podcast.
Oh my gosh. I would actually love to hear what he would have to say about this. I mean, he's like, we talk about this stuff all the time, and I read him what people send me about, you know, like, thank you for, you know, saying the things that you're saying. And he's, like I said, he's this like woke feminist dude. But sometimes it's a little bit much. So I would love to hear what he has to say about this.
Definitely a future idea. Yes. So I kind of want to throw in and mention something that stood out to me in your book about how April, she talks to her former doula friend. And I just love that she was giving her the advice of you guys need to find each other's currency yeah. and make those deposits, because we get into this routine of even when we kind of start figuring it out, like, you know, get the kids, let's help out, teamwork, blah, blah, blah. But we forget to feed each other's needs. So I think that that's super important. And I love that you mentioned that.
Yeah. And that actually came from that a similar person like that in my life, who's one of my really good friends. The hard part is when their currency is not what you like to what you like to barter in. I still don't have that part totally figured out, but she's absolutely right. And the person who told me about this, I mean, just like the character in the book, you know, she's been married for like 50 years and, you know, she talks about it. She's like, it's not romantic. It's not this romantic thing. Like it's, you know, as we all know, it's work. But I think it's important. What I think that that represents, the finding each other's currency, is really knowing your partner and knowing what's important to them. And that's like a respect thing. That's not just, I'm going to show up and, you know, just do, you know, just show up to this relationship and this parenting thing and do what I do. But it's like, no, I see you as a person and I know what makes you tick. And I'm going to try to give that to you. I mean, that's, again, part of this whole thing that I would love for dads, this training that I would love for dads to have at the beginning, which is maybe some dads need a like how to nurture. I mean, imagine most men have been conditioned that that's not their job, that they're the actually the receivers, that they're on the receiving end. And imagine if there was a class that taught them how to be the givers on that. I mean, I feel like it would be just like, it would be life changing.
Hey, we are the change, right? We, you know, Megan and I have boys, so that's kind of what we're going for, to teach them that, because I agree, like, they weren't taught that. And a lot of times that can tend to be their, you know, quote unquote excuse, you know, well, I didn't see that with my parents and blah, blah, blah. But I agree, they need to be reconditioned and taught that. And so we are the future of, you know, helping out women and making them feel seen. So I love that. And I also love how another piece of her advice that she was giving her was how in modern motherhood, it's so much freaking harder for us. Like we have so much high expectations. I mean, you look back at pictures of old days and mothers aren't even putting their kids in car seats. Right. They're feeding them whatever, you know, and now we have like your book says, feeding them organic and, you know, all this just expectations of cooking and being the wife and everything. How would you give, or what would you give some like a piece of advice for women who feel that way? Like they're just, they feel that expectation and they're like, I don't know how to feel better about that.
I mean, it's hard because it's so much easier said than done, but it's really, I feel like you looking at your kids and knowing that really what they need is you to be thoughtful and loving and value them and listen to them and treat them like they matter. And all the other stuff is not as important. I think when you boil, and it's hard, especially when they're younger, because a lot of your job is the picking what food they eat, picking the pediatrician that they go to, picking the preschool. It's all these things. But now I have a 13-year-old and everything is just like the bond that we have. And really for me, the comfort level that he has to be able to talk to me about anything, to be able to laugh about stuff. And it's like all of that stuff that we worry about, none of that is relevant in that, the kind of meals and all of that. But I mean, I almost don't want to just say that, because I really want to validate what that feels like when you're in it, when all of that does feel so important. But I mean, I go back to like this Martha character, you know, who, and the same friend in real life said to me, you know, none of us come out unscathed and you're going to F your kids up no matter what you do. And I mean, she just laughs because she's got a lot of kids and she's like, you know, I had no idea. Here I was doing this thing. Like for her, for example, and I asked her this, but she's on one of my podcasts. Her name is Kathy, and she does a brilliant, I do an interview with her that's like the long game of motherhood. So she tells us these things that are the most important. And she was really worried about her kids having like a religious background because she grew up Catholic and now isn't. But she said, you know, I worked so hard to get him into Catholic school. And then they came to me one day and they were like, Mom, we don't want to go to this. We don't want to be in Catholic school. And so she's like, I put so much energy into that. And then they all hated it. Like, you're screwed no matter what you do. So I feel like really thinking about those mantras help me. Like I think one of my chapter titles named All Roads Suck Balls. Like, just, there's no winning it. There's honestly no winning it. If you feed your kid every organic perfect meal, they're going to turn out to be an asshole. I'm sorry. But I even saw this with my own son, who was like heckling McDonald's because he'd never been to one, because we ate, you know, fairly good. And he was like, why would people eat that? And I'm like, all right, I'm taking you to McDonald's because you are not going to grow up to be this like bougie, like I only eat street tacos kind of kid. You are going to taste the taste and you are going to love the fries. And so I took him through the drive-thru and made him eat McDonald's. And he was like, yeah, that's really good. I'm like, so do not throw shade on anybody.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's the thing, so awesome. Right? But I don't know if I would have done that when he was like 4, because I would have been like, oh no, now he's going to just only want fast food. And I would have been insane about it.
Yeah, I think that we all just need those humble reminders that, you know, it's going to be okay. They don't even remember the dumbest shit that we stress about. Yes. They're going to remember, my mom hugged me. My mom was there for me. She gave me those kisses. And so I think that it's awesome to hear that, you know, that pat on the back. You got this. They're alive.
Yes.
You know, just let it be.
Yeah. And you'll find this out, like people who have, you know, younger kids, you will find this out when they're, you know, like, or 13, even probably sooner than that, especially with school stuff. You'll go, why did I worry about his or her reading, or the way that they wrote the letter R, or, you know, these crazy things that we get so caught up in. And you're like, all that stuff, mm-hmm. Much of that stuff, I don't want to say all that stuff, but much of that stuff just works itself out. And, you know, you okay. Like, and what kills me too, I say this to my kids too, is that I did so many like lovely, natural, mothery things for them in the first like 5 or 6 years of their lives. And then I was like, okay, this is too exhausting. I'm just going to be who I am. But so they don't even remember all the amazing crap I did for them. So I'm like, I nursed both of them for 2 years. I'm like, I get no credit for this. And I have to believe that there's something there that was like magical and energetic that we bonded, that there is some like remnant of that. But to be honest with you, like they just know me mostly as like the mom I've been the past 4 years. So that magical version of myself that was this really great natural mother, but who was like dying inside, like they don't know her. So it was all
you're absolutely right. you know, people stress so much about that. Mm-hmm. I have friends who are close to me who are constantly like the star mom, and to me, even just seeing that, it tires me out. It exhausts me. And I'm just like, part of me is like, right. How in the can you do that and keep up with it? But then also I'm like, oh, I kind of wish I was a little bit like that. But I'm like, no, I can't. And I don't want to be someone that I'm not, you know? So just who yes. I am. And at the end of the day, you know, your kids are going to love you no matter. And a thing that I always remember, I don't remember I found it or saw or heard it, but it's one of these things where like after I have a background in fitness and so does Celeste. And after I got pregnant, especially with stuff, and now I have a little pooch and it's taken me a really long time for it to go away. And of course my skin is still loose and I obsess over it and I'm like, what the hell? But then you think of it and you're like, your kids right. will never ever remember like, oh, mom's saggy stomach. So it's kind of like this thing where you have to be kind to yourself. You have to just embrace what you and embrace what you're working with and trust that your kids, no matter what, will appreciate you at the end of the day, because really what matters are those moments that you are on the ground playing with them, you are talking with them, you are hugging them, you're giving them love and affection and attention. And that's really all they need and crave, especially at this point in their lives. So.
Exactly. Yes.
Totally. I wanted to ask, we wanted to ask, if you're not in a film, who would play the role of April?
So there's actually been talk about this. which is exciting, and who knows where things will lead. But I haven't seen a non-animated movie in about a decade. So all of my choices are, you know, like Parker Posey, like, you know, from like 10 or 15 years ago, she would be perfect. I would love for somebody comedic to play April, but I realize that there's a whole new generation of actresses, even though I don't know many of them. So I like the idea of a comedian like Kate McKinnon, you know, a Saturday Night Live person would be great.
Yes.
Kristen Bell, I love, even though I know she was in Bad Moms, so maybe that's too close. Maybe Jessica Biel, so I could meet Justin Timberlake. I'm just trying to think how this could benefit me. I mean, I honestly don't know. I couldn't even tell you the name of of a newer actress. Like, even those are not the newest people. So I wanted to ask you, do you guys have an idea of who you think would be great to play her?
Well, I was going to say, I really like Kate McKinnon. I think she would be killer at that. She's hilarious anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I like Kristen Bell because, I mean, she is known for her funny, you know, mom scenes, and just I would like her to be her.
Yes. So. Yeah. Okay, good. We're on the same page here.
Yeah. Another fun question we have for you is, do you think there could possibly be a sequel, another book for us in the future?
Yes. So probably so. I do have a sequel outlined, which is something I recently did. And, you know, it's a hard thing because I wrote this book not to become an author. It wasn't a thing like, I want to be a writer. And so what will I write? It was the idea that hit me over the head and wouldn't let me sleep. And then I had to write. So I didn't write it thinking, you know, what would they do next? But now that I'm kind of where I'm at and I'm thinking, what would they do next? Is kind of a fun place to be in. So, yeah. So I have an outline, you know, as we follow April and June to the next stage of their lives, with the kids being a little bit older, the ladies are a little bit closer to midlife crisis, and they're reassessing, you know, where they are in life, their marriage, at least April, and then, you know, are they happy, and then one watching the other one kind of rediscover herself and what kind of mirror that holds up. But, you know, writing a book is a lot like giving birth. So after you do it, you're like, I will never do that again. Like, you can't even imagine choosing to go through that ever again. But, you know, but then you forget the hardships. So I'm at that stage where I'm all like, but it sounds fun to be back with these characters and put them in wild situations. So I want to say that there's a great chance that there will be another book. If I really think about the entire process of doing that, I will go into a panic attack. But it's like I know from doing it and like teaching myself how to write a book, you just have to take it, as Anne Lamott says, one bird at a time. You just have to take it page by page by page. So I'm not gonna stress out about the whole thing. But yes, I would love to, and I have new drugs for them to do. I have a whole yes. scenario that I want to put them in. So yes, hopefully
have them go on an ayahuasca trip.
There may be something similar. Yes.
No, that's awesome. We're here for it. I loved your sense of humor. I mean, we could totally be best friends in real life.
Aww.
So yeah, thanks for creating this book, and we loved it. It definitely depicts a good, it's fair, like modern motherhood feels. And so it's very relatable. So we enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being on our episode.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. It was such a pleasure. And thank you for doing the work that you do about being real about what motherhood is like, so that we're not all pretending that it's just we're all enjoying it and aren't we blessed. And right, that's part of it, but there's this whole other part that we need to acknowledge so that we can, you know, take action and do things in order to make it how we want it. You know, we co-create this whole parenthood motherhood thing. And so I feel like, I don't mean to get all activist, but I feel like it's time that we demand that which we need. And it's not like we're asking, I think moms think that they're asking for like spa days every day or these outlandish things, but most of us just want like an hour to ourselves, an uninterrupted shower, a meal that we're not standing up for. It's like, we just want basic human rights. That's it.
That is so true. I mean, yeah, we agree. And so thank you so much. And before we go, Brandy, how can people find you and find your book and all this good juicy details?
Yeah. So I have a robust adult conversation Facebook page, which is where I post a lot. And I also have an Instagram and Twitter account, but those things are kind of a little bit elusive to me. But people can find out more about me and the podcast and my book on my website, which is adultconversation.com. And my book comes out May 5th, and people can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Bookshop, and in stores. I just like however that works. I don't know. But I'm also offering virtual book clubs if people want to get one together to read my book with their friends that they miss. So I'm in the process of getting that figured out. But if people are interested in having their book club read the book and then have me stop by for a Q&A or really like anything because I got time on my hands, they can go to my website and email me and we can work the details out. So I'm happy to do all sorts of virtual stuff like that.
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much. We're excited. We're excited for your book. Congratulations. Yes, congratulations. Again.
Thank you so much for taking time and talking with us today. Take care.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Bye. Take care, you guys.